This is The Full Story. I'm Rebecca Saran in for Ron Ropiak. Finding affordable and licensed childcare can be daunting and very expensive. According to the Organization of Economic Cooperation and Development, couples in the United States spend more than 30% of their average salary earnings on childcare. 33.2% to be exact. Not everyone can cover the cost. Some parents compromise on the quality of care, reduce their hours, or leave the workforce to become full-time caregivers. Without childcare, the economy of a family can suffer, and it's usually women who take the financial hit and stall in their careers. And sometimes these choices can even put the child's safety at risk. So what's being done in our region to support families seeking childcare programs? Joining me now is New York State Senator Anna Kaplan. She is a member of the Senate Committee on Children and Families. Ms. Kaplan, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
We gave a number having to do with average cost of child care nationwide. Give us an idea of what it costs in New York.
I would think if it's minimum of what you mentioned, if not more, because as we know, everything in New York just costs more. The cost, of course, varies from one community to another community. But it is a very big concern for all of us. And we want to make sure that we can keep women who want to be in workforce the ability to stay in the workforce and not to take time off and to go back years later to find out it's so much more harder for them to go back.
Let's talk a little bit about the impact the lack of affordable child care can have on an economy, in the economy of New York, for example. Can you give us a sense of that?
Well, I think it's really important for those who want childcare should be able to have access to the best quality childcare available. So this way they can grow in their fields or they can follow up, whether they're in school and follow up and get the credentials that they need and to be able to grow as the time comes, not to put everything on hold for the period that they're raising their children. And as you know, that's almost always it's a sacrifice that a woman has to make and not a man. And the inequality is something that we're trying to really tackle and work on so that women could have those options to go back to work.
Yes, this is one of the primary reasons why we're seeing pay inequity when it comes to men and women in the workforce. What is New York doing in this area?
Well, we've passed several bills this past legislation. One of them was a Senator Mayer's bill where it allows campaigns to pay for children expenses. If you remember, we had a candidate, Luba Gretchen, who was running for Congress, and she had young kids, and she wanted to get a babysitter so that she could campaign. So she petitioned, and she got allowance by FEC to use campaign funds to pay for her child care expense. This would enable anyone who wants to run for office to be able to do that. We codified that into the state of New York and for others to take advantage of the same thing. We also passed another bill that was Senator Savino's bill, which allows parents and caretakers who are otherwise eligible for child care subsidy and eligible for such assistance to receive subsidy when the child care is necessary for them to sleep. These are some of our nurses, our firefighters, to be able to come home and to get 8 hours of sleep. This used to be allowed in about 47 of the social services district, with some of them not opting in. And I know that Senator Savino has been working on this since 2010. We passed this in the Senate and Assembly, and now it's just waiting for the governor to sign. And this would allow anyone who has kids under age 6 who are not in school full day to be able to tap into this. Another legislation that we also passed was Senator Sanders' bill, where the Empire State Development could do a study and basically look at the child care facilities in areas that are economically distressed throughout the state, and where it really gives us a open view of what's happening and how we can tackle this problem in each area.
You bring up a very good point about childcare facilities that are in economically stressed areas and regions, and the concern that perhaps young children are receiving substandard care just because the families that use them can't afford them. What are you hearing from your constituents about this?
Well, I think this study will be really helpful. It will help us develop strategies and expansion of childcare programs and work with also the OCFS, the Office of Children and Family Services, and also Office of Temporary and Disability Assistance. This is more of an economic development issue, I think, and I think that might be a way for us to tackle. We want to make sure all children have access to high-quality care, no matter where they live and what their incomes are. This is an important issue for all of my residents.
What is the status of subsidies in New York? Some of the states are seeing cuts to subsidies for child care. What is happening in New York currently?
We're going to make sure that we're fighting that this doesn't happen in New York. And this is an important issue for all of us on the Senate. And we want to recognize the importance of this to the families and to all of our residents here.
And part of this, when we talk about perhaps substandard care, has to do with inspections and licensing and supervision. Tell us what New York is doing in that regard.
I really do think this study will be a very eye-opening study for all of us to look at all the different areas and to work with these different agencies to come up with a strategy how we can help out and address some of the specific safety standards and education standards for our children and our communities.
I know you're talking about a study, but parents at home are probably saying studies take a long time, and that doesn't include initiating legislation and then putting that legislation into law. What's happening now to help families?
I know that we have done a lot of different legislation to make sure that the safety standards are being followed in all the different areas, making sure that there are no tipping of the furniture, making sure blinds are really, the cords on the blinds that are hanging are not really accessible, and different ways to improve the safety across the board. Those were the initiatives that we did take up this year. And we will continue to tackle this and, I guess, listen more to our constituents and see how else we can address their concerns.
And for you personally, you mentioned the new bill that's going to allow campaigns to pay for child care. You as a working woman, what has been your personal experience? You have children.
I do. I have to say I'm very blessed. I was very lucky that I had the option of staying home and raising my children. My children are both grown up. They're in college. But it was really a decision that myself and my husband made together. And I was one of the lucky ones who could do this. Not everybody is really as fortunate as I am. And that's why this is a very important issue, and we want to make sure that we address this to allow and to really help all the women who want to stay in the workforce have the opportunity to do so.
And what is New York doing, because some states are doing this, expanding their pre-K programs to make them full day? And that at least provides almost like a public school option for parents of children who are, say, 4 or 5.
Well, I think we already have the pre-K expansion across New York.
So it's full day?
Yes. In the island, I know some places there are still half a day, but we are working on this to see how we can address this. And of course, it's also very helpful in terms of the early education that we give our children and helping them succeed as they grow up. The earlier they could get more help, the better they are set up to succeed as they get to the next level in their education.
And what is New York doing to remind parents and educate them about tax credits that are available, whether it's the earned income tax credit or the dependent care tax credit?
Well, that's on all of us to get the message out and make sure that people are aware of what's available to them and the resources that they can use and the tax credits that are available that they can take and tap into.
Overall, are you optimistic that New York is going to be able to, after you conduct the study, having to look at these child care facilities in stressed economic areas and other legislation that's pending, are you optimistic that New York is going to be able to move to a model where parents, especially moms, can work if they want to work and be comfortable their kids are going to be safe?
I am very optimistic. I think this study will give us the data and the information we need to tackle this issue. And I always look at the glass half full. And I think this will actually give us a mirror to look into and find out what we need to work on. And we are committed and we are very much in line to work to find solutions for this.
All right.
I said, this bill was going on since 2010, and it's been amazing to be able to pass this bill, and it's amazing for me to be part of this historical legislation that we passed, this being one of them.
All right, New York State Senator Anna Kaplan, thank you for joining us today on The Full Story.
Thank you.
All right, we'll be right back. This is The Full Story. I'm Rebecca Saran for Ron Ropiak. We're talking about the state of child care in Connecticut. About 3 years ago, the state cut subsidies that help working families pay for licensed child care programs. Last December, the Office of the Child Advocate released a report that cited the decrease in enrollment in those programs could be linked to an increase in child fatalities at illegal home care programs in the years 2016 and 17. With me now is Beth Bai. She is the commissioner of the Connecticut Office of Early Childhood. Beth, welcome to the program.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Let's talk about this report and the statistic here that found 6 out of 9 infant and toddler deaths at Connecticut daycare services in 2016 and 17 occurred at unlicensed and illegal home daycare programs. I mean, it's a tragedy when any child dies in general at a daycare facility, but what's going on here?
Well, I mean, I think that it's one is too many, 6 is unconscionable, and we've been working closely with the Office of the Child Advocate, our office, since that report, on strategies to increase the access, particularly of infant toddler care. And you talked about the Care for Kids program being closed over a period of time. That's been reopened since November of 2017, and we have moved from about 12,000 families up to over 18,000 families, 18,000 children currently enrolled in that program. So we've been able to open the program thanks to state and federal funding combined, and increase access to that. In addition, next week, we'll be announcing new rates for infant toddler care to try to increase the supply in center-based care to give families as many options as they can have. And we've already increased the rates for family child care for infants and toddlers. So we have taken significant steps since that report.
I mean, this is part of the problem, isn't it? Just the high cost of daycare. And many of these families just can't afford to go to officially licensed programs. So,
yes, I mean, it's expensive when you put it all together. But in general, it's between $3 and $6 an hour. You know, much less than people pay to have someone mow their lawn or do other services for them. Childcare is the lowest paid industry in the United States, and so you have a combination of factors, and certainly in Connecticut, it's among the lowest, where it's hard to attract providers for the fee. Now, when a family has to pay that 40 hours a week or 50 hours a week, it adds up. So child care in other countries is sort of part of the social safety net. In the United States, it is not. Parents are to hold on for dear life till their kids get to school, which is the biggest supplier of child care in the country, our public schools. So it does need our attention from a policy perspective.
And what can be done having to do with attracting qualified workers when you're looking at just over $13 an hour in their pay? I mean, they're taking care of our most precious commodity, and we're really paying them, you know, a minimum wage.
Yeah, and the brain research right now says that basically 80% of brain development happens before the age of 5. And so this, we're really building the foundation of individuals in those early years. And so, you know, over the years, Connecticut has made investments in school readiness that serves about 6,000 children. And then also for decades, we've been making investments in state-funded child care centers, another 5,000 to 6,000 children. And then, of course, the Care for Kids, which is sort of like a voucher that parents can use, which serves another 17,000 or 18,000 children right now and going up. But there are, you know, there are 230,000 children in Connecticut birth to age 5. And we know that most parents have both parents working. And particularly if you're a parent now in Connecticut and you're expecting, you better be on a wait list at a child care center, because Connecticut is short 50,000 infant toddler seats for children, for parents who need to go to work and need child care for their children.
And you bring up a good point, because parents almost become desperate, and they may take their child to what seems like a loving home, a wonderful caretaker, but they're not licensed, therefore it's illegal, but they think, well, that's all just paperwork and bureaucracy.
Yeah, and that's really wrong. We have a whole campaign going right now called Trust Licensed Care, because as a parent, you want to be sure that there are unannounced inspections of that family child care home or center-based care. And in Connecticut, we are so fortunate that the state does invest in its licensing program, and every single program gets one unannounced visit per year, which is different than other states. So parents can have that peace of mind, because it's not just the unannounced visit. It's that the person there knows there can be an unannounced visit at any time. And, you know, again, these are our most precious resources. We need to make sure that children are being cared for in a way that is protecting their health and safety, you know, that the water is not too hot, that there's not a pool without a fence, that the other children in care have their immunizations. That's been a big issue this year. Mm-hmm. Some of those basic health and safety protections that parents want to be sure about. So we've had a whole campaign about trust licensed care, and that was part of the response to the child deaths in the unregulated, unlicensed care market. We've also really stepped up enforcement because, you know, it's illegal to provide care to children who aren't relatives on a regular basis in Connecticut outside of their own home. So we're also really, neighbors have been reporting situations that they see as unsafe, and we go and investigate and make sure that the children are safe. So, but parents, if we don't have enough spaces and parents need to get to work, and they need to put a roof over their heads and feed their children, they are sometimes left in very difficult situations with difficult decisions to make. Mm-hmm. And a lot of parents are splitting their work shifts, so they don't have time together as a couple or as a family. The new economy is really challenging for families with some of the unpredictable work schedules.
And let's talk about parents being proactive and asking the tough questions that may make them uncomfortable, but some of those being, what do you think is the most important? Staffing, for example. How many babies, toddlers per caretaker should there be in one of these facilities?
Well, in Connecticut, we have a rule in family child care, you can't have less than 2 under 1, and in the center-based care, it's 4 to 1. You can't have more than 4 to 1, because in a center, you also have directors and often assistant teachers and other adults around. But in a family child care home, it's 2. I think we have to, like, the questions can be simple, which are you licensed and are you accredited? So if you can answer yes to both of those questions, then it makes it easy on parents. And we are at the office developing a system where over the next few years that will give parents more information, sort of like you see now at the restaurants. It will be an A, B, or C. Ours won't be an A, B, or C. But we all know nobody goes to a restaurant with a C on the window.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think we've given parents enough information. So we are right now, with some federal funds, building the infrastructure for a system that not just gives a rating, but also supports centers to improve their quality and helps develop coaching capacity and improve the quality and help centers move from a step one to a step two to a step three.
Because
right now the questions are you licensed and are you accredited?
And should you, before the system is in place, should you say, not only ask them that, but show me your documentation?
I think that's a really good suggestion, yes. And if they're licensed, we've sent out decals to centers that they're posting that just say TLC, which is Trust Licensed Care. So most of them will have that right on the window. At least the centers I visited have had that. And then also, if they're accredited, that they always have the accreditation torch. Or Head Start has their own approval. If your child goes to a Head Start, they have to meet those quality standards or they lose their Head Start funding. So just being a Head Start and being an open Head Start functioning in Connecticut is another sign of a program that's meeting quality standards.
Well, it's nice to hear that the state is helping parents because, as you say, they're juggling multiple jobs. They're having a hard time finding placement for their kids. The cost, there's so many challenges that they face in just trying to keep their job. But thank you, Beth Bye, for taking some time with us.
Thank you.
All
Great
right.
To talk to you.
You
okay,
too.
Bye-bye.
And joining me now is Merrill Gay. He is the executive director of the Connecticut Early Childhood Alliance. Merrill, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
I know Governor Lamont just signed the Paid Family and Medical Leave Act in the state. Tell me about it and what will it provide for families?
So paid family leave will provide 12 weeks of leave for somebody who either has their own illness or injury that they need to take care of themselves, or they have a child, or they need to take care of another family member. And Connecticut has, in our provisions, if you have a complicated pregnancy, you could actually get an extra 2 weeks if you're giving birth. And this, what this will do is provide up to 90% wage replacement. It's on a sliding scale. So for parents who or people who are at the low end of the wage scale, they get up to 90% of wage replacement, up to a maximum of $900 a week for 12 weeks.
And how does this work with the federal law, or does this?
Well, this is stronger than the federal law because the federal law provides you unpaid time off. It basically says you'll get your job back. But what that meant for most people was that's a nice guarantee. But I can't take 12 weeks off. I don't have that much. You know, I don't have that much money saved to go without a paycheck. So this Connecticut's law will provide that wage replacement through a payroll deduction or payroll tax that kicks in, I think it's January of 2021, and then the following year is when you can actually take the leave. But this will be a huge help for parents of young children who struggle to find infant toddler care because this will allow both parents to take 12 weeks, and you can stagger that. So you could, you know, one parent or the other could be home for the first 6 months of a child's, life.
Which is a huge help to families. And then once they get beyond that 3 to 6 months, depending on their situation, give us an idea. We talked to State Senator from New York at the beginning of the program about the cost of child care in the state of New York. Give us an idea what families are paying in Connecticut.
So in Connecticut, the average for infant toddler care is $303 a week. That's $1,300 a month or $15,700 a year. And that's the average. I spoke to someone this past weekend who was spending $400 a week for care.
And that's with one. That's only one child.
That's one child, right? So, that's more than in-state tuition at a four-year college in Connecticut.
Let's talk about some of the additional steps the state is taking to support families. Beth Bai, briefly, we chatted about the Care for Kids program. Explain to us what it does in more depth.
So Care for Kids provides a portable child care subsidy certificate that a parent can use to pay for care, and that care can be infant toddler care, preschool care, or after school care for a child up to age 12, up to age 13. And it is available to families making up to 50% of the state median income. And if you went to ctcareforkids.org, you could find all of that, the income breakdown stuff. It's careforkids.com, not org, sorry. Mm-hmm. So for a family of four, that's $56,250 that you can earn up to that much money to be able to qualify for a certificate. Now, it will only pay for care if all available adults in the household are working. So if you have a parent who's working full-time and another parent who's only working half-time, it will pay for care during the time that the second parent is working half-time. And so the idea is this is to help families go to work. And Connecticut is one of the states that does not have a provision to allow you to go to a job training program or go to school to, you know, improve your job prospects. Most other states do have some provision for that. In Connecticut, we're the only one in New England that does not allow that to some extent. Rhode Island is if you're in a state job training program, but Massachusetts, Vermont, New Hampshire, Maine allow you to go to college and get a child care subsidy to cover the time you're in school.
It looks as if the state has built in an increase for Care for Kids, but it's not clear if there's going to be an increase. Am I right on this, on the center-based infant toddler rates if they go higher?
Yeah, so there will be there'll be an increase. It's going to get announced this week. I won't say the amounts, but it'll be a significant increase in the payment rates that Care for Kids will pay to providers. And what that really means is that parents will have smaller copays. We are so far behind the market rate right now. We've been paying like $90 less per week for infant toddler care than the market. So that meant that a parent who had a voucher that was worth $211, of which they pay a share based on their income, they couldn't find anybody who would take their child for $211. On average, they were paying more like $305. And so they were having to make up the difference on top of the parent share that the formula says they should be paying. And that just meant that lots of parents were not able to find care that they could afford. And so either they couldn't use their voucher or they are turning to a cheaper alternative, which would be home daycare versus center-based care.
And are these portable subsidies, these vouchers, are they only used at center-based facilities?
No, you can use them at a center, you can use them in a family licensed family daycare, or you can pay a family member who doesn't live with you to provide the care. So there are quite a few grandparents, aunts, uncles who are taking care of an infant. And that's a really important part of the piece because there are an awful lot of people who are working non-standard hours. And you can't find a child care center that's open second shift, not much less third shift. And we also have lots and lots of people who are working on-demand schedules where they don't know whether they're going to be at work on Thursday, because they won't find out until the night before.
All right, Merrill, I was going to ask you if you would stay with us and come back, and we'll continue our conversation on the full story. Mr. Gay is the executive director of the Connecticut Early Childhood Alliance, and we'll be back with more after a break. And we're talking about childcare today, the high cost of childcare and its impact on families in Connecticut and Long Island. Joining me again is Merrill Gay. He is the executive director of the Connecticut Early Childhood Alliance. All right, welcome back, Merrill.
Yeah. Hi.
Let's talk a bit about the impact that affordable childcare has on the economy at large in Connecticut, because there's this big ripple effect, isn't there?
Absolutely. For a parent, having reliable child care that they can take their child to so they can go to work is every much as important as the road or bridge that they take, that they drive to get to work. Without child care, parents can't work. And especially when we have an economy, a job market that's as tight as it is, where employers have vacancies and they are looking for employees. But people who are coming into the labor market are people who, in many cases, are people who've been on the sidelines because they've been taking home taking care of kids. And wages are starting to creep up enough to make it worth doing until you see how much child care costs. And that's really the problem. But for families, if you've got two children under five, you are likely to be spending more on child care than on rent or a mortgage. It's a huge chunk of working families' budget.
And that mortgage, I mean, in Connecticut, some of the highest in the nation.
Yes. Yeah, we're, I think, the sixth highest in the country as far as the cost of infant toddler care.
And you alluded to it a moment ago about this, the new economy, and the way people are working today is far different than it was 35, 40 years ago. And that's posing new child care challenges, isn't it?
Absolutely. We have far more people working variable schedules. We have far more people working part-time jobs without, no adult in the house having a year-round full-time job. And that's largely because the jobs that were created after the Great Recession have been service sector jobs where the goal is to minimize cost, so you keep everybody working part-time and therefore you don't pay benefits, and you transfer the cost of health care to the state through Husky. And that's in a way that employers are hiring people these days.
And I think many who've been in the workforce for more than 20 years, especially women who have to step out if they have that luxury, say, why isn't that that corporations haven't come further when it comes to flex time, job sharing, in the corporation childcare? What are you hearing for companies that they are not as, have not been as forward thinking as they could be on this matter?
Typically what I hear from corporations are, you know, that they offer flexible spending accounts and things like that, but it really is still the case that we, as a society, look to women to take care of kids, and we haven't come around to the reality that most women are in the workforce, that 62% of children under two have all adults in the family working. We haven't caught up with the change in the economy.
And this brings to mind the safety issues that can be, that can result from the lack of funding and really the desperate position many parents find themselves in. They really have no place to turn. What is Connecticut doing to ensure that children are safe in daycare?
Well, the state has added quite a few licensing inspectors, and one of the things they do besides go and visit licensed providers is to investigate calls about unlicensed care. And that's, you know, something that is very concerning when you've got, you know, somebody with 10 babies in cribs in a basement someplace charging 10 bucks a kid. That's something the parents can afford, but it's not safe. And, you know, every week or so, I think OEC is sending someone out to investigate a call about unlicensed care. It's really a shame that parents are put into the situation where they don't have any option but unlicensed care. But it is illegal to provide unlicensed care, and we need to be doing more to make it possible for families to earn a living and get themselves out of poverty.
I know Beth Bye earlier in the program talked about Connecticut and inspections and on-site unannounced visits. And I guess every center will get at least one, but there's the threat because it's unannounced. How is that working in terms of safety measures that daycare centers are taking?
Well, I have my members are all licensed providers, and you know, for the most part, most of them are accredited, which makes them higher quality programs. You know, I hear them complain that you know, providers are licensing inspectors are like hammers; everything's a nail. So you know, they're looking for a violation someplace, and maybe it's a little rust on top of their swing set. But you know, licensing inspectors do important work, going out there making sure that providers are following the rules and providing quality care.
I know at one point in the state, I think it was in Stamford, there was one daycare facility and there was an issue with the death of a child having to do with administering medication. The parent didn't know about it, which was a horrific story. How can you reassure parents? I know there's the licensing, I know that there's the inspections, but when it comes to medications and also vaccinations, that kids are going to be safe.
Well, you've opened up a big can of worms there.
We've got time.
You know, vaccinations are really important when you think about, you know, the number of people who came down with polio and, you know, before we had a polio vaccine. All of those things, when kids aren't vaccinated, you have the potential that a child who can't be vaccinated, say a child who's recovering from cancer treatment or something, is on immunosuppressant drugs, if they're exposed to a child who has gotten sick because they're not immunized, that can really be a life-threatening situation. And so we have in our licensing rules the requirement that providers get proof of vaccinations when they are enrolling children. And so that's part of the way in which we're enforcing that vaccination rule.
And what about administering medications?
For licensed centers, they have to have somebody who's trained in medical administration in administering medicine. Home daycares, I am less clear on that. I think that they've got to have some training in that. Part of what the Office of Early Childhood has been doing with their quality improvement program is providing lots of online training programs so that a home daycare provider who's spent a day taking care of kids can then do a training online in the evening as opposed to having to go someplace or shut down their daycare to go to a training class. And I'm pretty sure that's one of the things that they're including in that training.
So what advice would you give to parents when they are looking at child care facilities and evaluating them, trying to find one that will work with their schedule and with their child? What should they be asking?
Well, I would say the first thing you do is you call 211 to get information about where are the licensed providers nearby that might have a vacancy. And then you should be asking them about the provider's training level. If you're talking about a home daycare, it's how many children are they taking care of? What's a regular day look like? Could I stop by and see, you know, how things are going in the course of the day? You know, unfortunately for most parents, the real issues are, is it open when I need it to be open? You know, does this one close at 5:30? I can't get back from work until 5:45. And, you know, it's those things, it's the cost and the convenience that tend to be the deciding factors before you ever get to thinking about quality, especially with infant toddler care, because it is so scarce. There are only about enough licensed slots for a quarter of the kids who might need care. There's a huge shortage. And in some parts of the state, it's much less. In New Britain, I think we had enough licensed infant toddler slots for 7% of the kids.
So women are just, or men, depending, are they just dropping out of the workforce, or are they turning to illegal centers?
In a lot of cases, they're turning to family.
Mm-hmm.
In lots of cases, they're juggling. And you've got, you know, the baby handoff where one parent is at work and then stops, meets someplace to get the baby from the other parent who's going to work. Or people are patching it together that, you know, 2 days a week grandma's watching them when she's not working, and then, you know, another day a neighbor's watching, and then, you know, it's just that stress of juggling childcare and the potential that something could go wrong. You know, I'm expecting grandma to watch my kids, and I don't know that she's got a doctor's appointment that she's got to go to that day and can't take the baby. And what that does to parents' ability to work and keep a job because, you know, they're calling out sick because they don't have child care.
What is this doing to the effect of, as you look at your long-term projections about need down the road, 5 years, 10 years down the road, are you seeing a decrease in the population and there will not be this demand that we see today, or are you seeing something very different?
We have, I think we reached the bottom of the trough as far as the number of births. We went from, before the Great Recession, having about 40,000 babies born each year in Connecticut. We dipped down to about 36,000 in the most recent data from 2015. It takes Department of Public Health a while to get data out. Showed we were back up to 37,000 births. So we're seeing a change. We also have a big change in the demographics. 28% of the kids 28% of our kids are born to immigrants. We have a large immigrant population, and that's roughly what it is nationwide as well. That means we have different cultures, where in some of those cultures it's much, the notion of having care happen outside of the family is not common. So we've got lots of change going on.
Mm-hmm. And what about that with different cultures? For example, language. Is this something that for Connecticut care centers, that this is another layer of service or a higher level of employee, a staffer that they have to hire? They have to be bilingual, for example.
Yeah, what you'll tend to find is that families who speak one language will seek out care providers who speak that language. And so that may be looking for a home daycare provider from their own cultural language group. And there's an awful lot of care that happens within families. That's another place where the economy is changing, where you used to have more grandmothers at home who had never worked, and now you have a lot more grandmothers who are still working and who aren't available to take care of young children.
How is the pre-K system in Connecticut working to help alleviate some of this by expanding to full-day pre-K?
Yeah, so we have more children going to preschool in Connecticut than most of the states that claim to have universal preschool. So about 80% of our kids go to preschool before they start kindergarten. In Oklahoma, that's had universal preschool for 20 years, only 75% of kids go to preschool. And that's largely because parents in Connecticut are paying for preschool. Only about 20% of kids are in subsidized care. And that's a little bit more for preschool than for infant toddler care. But we have tended to, our school readiness preschool program has, and the magnet school pre-K programs and Head Start all tend to be focused in the cities. There are some of the school readiness in the surrounding suburban towns, but it's still only in about 55 or so of the 169 towns in the state.
Are you seeing, you mentioned Head Start, are you seeing kind of any innovative relationships, public-private partnerships, new models, new ways of looking at this that might help alleviate the burden for families?
One of the things that has been an interesting development was the Head Start Child Care Partnership, where Head Start services were extended to wrap around existing family daycare. So Head Start provides a bunch of other services beyond the actual child care. It's home visiting, it's health services for the child, and helping parents sort of figure out what's their plan to, you know, what are the goals that they have and how are they going to improve their sort of family mobility, economic mobility. Those are services that have been extended through a home visiting program around family daycare. And that's been an interesting new innovation. The other thing that a number of Head Start programs have done is to convert preschool slots into infant toddler early Head Start slots. Sometimes that's actual center-based care, and sometimes it's the home visiting model of Head Start, where they're really working with parents to understand what's their child development, you know, how are we going to, you know, do you know whether your child is on track, and what are the things that you can be doing at home to promote your child's development?
Well, it's a huge topic, so many different issues, and I know the state of Connecticut is working on this, and you taking the time today to talk with us, we so appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, Merrill Gay. He's the executive director of the Connecticut Early Childhood Alliance. And that's it for this edition of The Full Story. Thank you to all of our guests and to you, our listeners. I'm Rebecca Saran.